Okay, girls, firstly, kol hakavod for all of you for coming out. I know it's the end of a fast day. Which is probably the hardest part and the hardest time. I know for sure, so really kol hakavod. I like the end of Tisha B'Av. I like to try to focus. We've had a very, very meaningful Tisha B'Av. We really sat on the floor together and cried together and really tried to zone in and feel the pain of Klal Yisrael. And sometimes we can have a very, very meaningful experience, yet if we don't make it practical and real and make it a part of us, it's just a fleeting, beautiful moment, a fond memory that we look back at without having actually moved us in any which way. And we know that anything meaningful necessitates action also. And if we want to make this Tisha B'Av something significant and something real, it behooves us to take the time out and to say, you know, I really felt this Tisha B'Av for Klal Yisrael. I really felt for HaKadosh Baruch Hu's pain. I really felt something this Tisha B'Av. So therefore, what can I do about it? Now, as we have the last hour and a half, 2 hours of Tisha B'Av, I always called it a Yontif, Halavai, it should turn into that. And that's Bezrat Hashem, one day it will be one, right? What can I take with me? So each year I like to focus on a different Ben Adam Lav Chaveiro aspect of something that we can take with us. And at the end, Bezrat Hashem, we'll take a few moments to quietly think to ourselves, what from this Tisha B'Av can we actually take in a practical, real way? Because again, when we make it practical, that's what makes it really, really count. Otherwise our crying is for nothing. And we know that the Gemara tells us that the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed because of Sinas Chinam. And every single generation that it's not rebuilt, that means that it would have been destroyed in that very generation as well. Which means, in our very generation, if we would have had the Beis HaMikdash, if it's not rebuilt yet, we would have had it destroyed because we too are not strong enough in our Ahavas Chinam. So I wanted to just focus on one aspect. And I guess just to start, before we talk about what this aspect is, I actually brought, at the Kumsitz last night, I don't plan what I'm going to say, it's whatever I'm feeling is what comes out. So I guess what I decided this afternoon what I was going to talk about, I'm still in that mode a little bit of what I was feeling. So I brought the Gemara that I mentioned last night when we were saying Lamancha. I don't need the mic, right? We're good? Okay. So the Gemara says as follows. The Gemara in Bracho says as follows. I gave out the sheets. Here's exactly what I said. V'amar li. Rabbi Yossi was once walking, and he went into one of the chorvos of Yerushalayim. I didn't bring that part. And he went inside one of the ruins of Yerushalayim, and he met Eliyahu HaNavi on the way out afterwards. V'amar li. And Eliyahu HaNavi said to him, B'ni. What was the voice? Did you hear any sound when you're inside that ruin of Yerushalayim? Va'amarti lo, and I said to him, Shamati baskol. I heard a voice from heaven. This is what I mentioned last night. Shemenahemet kayomana. That is literally wailing like a dove. Va'omeret, and the baskol was saying, the divine voice was saying, Oy labanim. Sheba'avonoteihem hecharavti et biti v'tzarafti et hechali v'higlitam levein ha'umot. Woe is this baskol is crying and wailing, saying, woe is to the, my children, that because of their sins, I destroyed my house, and I had to burn my hechal, and I had to exile them amongst the nations of the world. V'amarli. And Eliyahu HaNavi said back to me, Chayecha v'chayei roshecha, I promise you, Lo sha'azu bilvad omer kach. This baskol didn't come out just when you were there, just now when you heard it. Bilvad. Omer kach ela b'chol yom v'yom, shalosh pa'amim omeret kach. V'lo zu bilvad ela b'shashi Yisrael, every single day, 3 times this baskol comes out wailing like a dove. And not only that, but every single time B'Shashi Yisrael Nechnasin Levate Knesio Ulevate Midrashio, when Klal Yisrael go into their shuls and their yeshivas, and they say Heishmei Harab HaGadol Mivarach, the time you would think would bring the most nachas to Rabbono Shalom, what happens? HaKadosh Baruch Hu menanea rosho, Hashem nods his head, that's a nachas. But then even then, ve'omer ashrei ha-melech she-mekalsin oto bevito, lucky, praised is the king that has his people praising him in his home. Kach malo le'av shehigla ad banav v'aylehem lebanim she-niglu me'al shulchan aviyem. But I is to that father who has to exile his children and to the children who have to be sent away from the table of their father. Every single day, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is in tremendous pain. We said that we're in pain. We're going to talk about which means of Bispin Adam Lachavir Amidos. We said that we're in pain. We can't even fathom the amount of pain HaKadosh Baruch Hu is in for us. It doesn't compare to it. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Midah, I have a lot to say. I don't have so much time, so I'm going to try to talk quickly. I'm debating whether to say a certain story or not. If I have time, I'll say it at the end. One of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's tremendous midos is that he feels tremendously, tremendously for us. And if you look at the next source, just very quickly, Parshas Mishpatim, Perek Chavdal, Pasuk Vav, Vayiru et Elokei Yisrael v'tachat raglav k'maaseh livnat ha-safir. Ucha'etzem ha-shamayim la-tohar. Says Rashi, he haital ifanav b'shat ha-shibud. Lizkort saratan shal Yisrael shahayu mishubadim b'maaseh livenim. What's the livnat ha-safir? HaKadosh Baruch Hu kiviyachol. We don't understand what that means. But right by his kiseh, right under his throne, there was this jar, this livnas ha-sapir, this white thing that reminded him constantly of the Sheba that Klal Yisrael were going through Mitzrayim. It wasn't enough that Klal Yisrael was suffering, but he literally in front of him had this reminder constantly because he was in such pain for the pain that Klal Yisrael was going through. And the truth of the matter is, I once heard this from Rebbetzin Yeager, whose husband is the Rosh Yeshiva of Shar Yashav. She once quoted her father, I heard her say this, she said, my father, Rav Freifeld, he used to ask this question all the time. Suppose the Rav Freifeld book is excellent, I haven't read it yet. But people used to ask him, if you had to synopsize and summarize the Torah into two words, he would say, what would it be? You want to give a summary of something and say what the whole contents, what would it be? What would it be? Anyone want to take a guess? So he would say always, v'halachta b'drachav, which means to follow in HaKadosh Baruch Hu's ways. If you want to take the entire Torah and summarize it in two words, it would be v'halachta b'drachav. Our job in this world is to look at HaKadosh Baruch Hu's midot and try to emulate them. That is our job. If you want to know what we're supposed to do, look at HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And we all know this famous Gemara in Shabbos that says, Abba Sha'ol Omer, Have a domelo, mahu chanan v'racham, af ata haye chanan v'racham. There are many midos of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. A main midah of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is this tremendous midah of rachmanos, of sympathy, of really feeling for Klal Yisrael, of feeling our pain, and truly being with us. He feels it more than we feel it. And our job in this world as Ovdei Hashem is to try as much as we can to emulate HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If we just look at his midos and try to go in those ways, we will be doing what we're supposed to be accomplishing in this world. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a kulo rachaman. He is completely, completely empathetic, sympathetic, feeling completely for us. And so I'd like to a little bit, not even talk about a step beyond rachmanas, but the two flip sides of it, we'll see in a moment. Rachmanas literally means sympathy. It means really, really feeling for the next person. We're going to talk about two aspects of that. We'll spend more time on the first, feeling for the next person. And we all know, just like I said at the beginning, emotion is something that's very raw and very special and very real. But in Yiddishkeit, emotion is never enough. If it stays in the emotion, if it stays in the crying on the floor, it's very nice, but it's just a day and a memory. When we take it to the next level and make it concrete and make it real, then this Tisha B'Av experience becomes a part of us. Rachmanas, I want to talk about that, but I want to talk about it in its ultimate level. Emotion, real emotion, if it's really, really deep and really, really sincere and true, necessitates action. Because if someone feels it deeply enough, it moves them to do something, right? So what is Rachmanas? Rachmanas is an emotion, and the action that reflects the emotion being deep enough would be the midah of noseh ba'olam chaviro. If someone truly sympathizes and feels for the next person, then they actually go and they help them carry their burden. They're actually there for them and moving with them and doing something for them. Do you hear that, girls? If it's just a simple emotion, superficial, then oh yeah, I feel so bad for her and I move on with my day. If it's real, if it's deep, it forces me to continue with the action. So I'd like to spend a few moments speaking about both flip side. I guess we'll start with the noseh ba'olam chaviro, of really, really, really being able to be a person, now this is the practical step, of being a person who's able to carry the burden of the next person, literally, of my friend. And the truth of the matter is, there's so much pain in this world, small and big. We spoke about tremendous amounts of pain last night. We spoke about it today. But there are the smaller pains, which are not small, that we all deal with, and we know that people deal with day in, day out. We spoke at Shalosh Shittos 2 weeks ago about the feeling of loneliness. And it gets bigger and bigger in between. There's so many things, so much pain that people have. And it's tremendous, tremendous, tremendous schus to be able to be a person who's noseh ba'olam chaviro. Noseh ba'olam chaviro is literally like it sounds. When you're carrying a heavy package, anyone ever have a very, very bag that they're carrying or suitcase that they're carrying, and all of a sudden someone goes to the other side and takes the other side, and what happens? The thing that was so heavy, it's so much lighter, right? I know with a stroller, sometimes I bump it up or I'm trying to move it somewhere, and all of a sudden someone takes the other side, and like, right? Nothing happened. I'm still carrying the stroller up. I'm still carrying this heavy, heavy bag. When someone came and carried the package with me, all of a sudden, that same exact stroller, that same exact heavy suitcase, became so much lighter. Noseh ba'ol im chaviro means seeing someone else's struggle, seeing someone else's pain, and being that person who not only notices, which is not simple, but also goes in and is able to go carry the burden with a friend. And all of a sudden, that suitcase, when someone didn't know it, someone did nothing. But once they are noseh ba'ol chaviro, you've just made the pain and the burden of the next person so, so, so much lighter and so much easier to carry. The Pasuk in Tehillim says, Maskil David b'ma'arat tefillah. Some of you may know this song, Habit Yamin Ure'eh. You know this song, girls? Ein li makir avad manos mimeni. Says David HaMelech, I'm in the ma'arat. And you know what? I'm alone in this cave. Ein li makir. I have no one who recognizes me. No one who's there for me. Avad manos meni. He's saying basically I have nothing. I feel completely and totally alone. Why? Because ein li makir. There's a beautiful end to the pasuk that he has a Kadosh Baruch Hu. But why? Because ein li makir. When someone doesn't have anyone else who recognizes them and the struggles that they're going through, it's such a lost, lonely, terrible feeling. It's an amazing thing what we can provide for the next person when we just try to help them carry their burden. I want to actually talk about this a little bit. If you look at this quote from Sichos Musar, actually, the next one, and then we'll bring it home, hopefully. Umidazu, do you see this, girls? This midah, shel hishtatfut batzar v'nesi'a ba'ol chaviro. This midah of being able to share in the pain of the next person and to help our friend carry his burden, kol adam chayavo. We think the great people, the Rebbetzin Machlises of the world, the Rebbetzin Kaladetskis of the world, they carry the world's burden. People come to them and walk away feeling like their burden is lighter. What does it have to do with little me, Rivka Yudin? What does it have to do with me? Right? But says Reb Chaim Shulevitz, every single person is obligated. It's not, wow, it's so awesome. It's so incredible. It's such a high level to be that person that helps the next person carry their burden. It's something that every single person is obligated. In fact, Rav Volpe and Ali Shore says, every single mita of Ben Adam L'Chaviro, its root and its source is nesi'a ba'ol chaviro. If someone's a person who notices others' pain and carries their pain with them, every single bein adam l'chaviro midah will be easier. You will automatically do chesed and help them. You would automatically be patient. Go through any mitzvah that you have in Adam HaChaver, it will automatically be easier, and you'll be able to accomplish it. If you're a person who's used to taking other person people's burdens with you, so he says every single person is obligated. V'chiyuv zeh limdu chazam gam kim Moshe Rabbeinu. We learn this from Moshe. And then he quotes the Gemara in Titus. The Gemara in Titus stuff, Yudalav Amaral says, Tanya Idach, Bizman Shat Sibor Sharai Bitsar. At the time when the community is going through pain, when there are people sitting Shiva right here in Eretz Yisrael over the loss of a young boy, when there are people in Florida sitting Shiva over the loss of a young father, when the community is going through a tsar, whether or not we know that person, Al Yomar Adam, if you are feeling, thinking, Jewish, Oved Hashem, a person is not allowed to say, Eilich Levesi, I'm going to go home, the Ochal, and I'll eat, the Eshteh, and I'll drink, the Shalom Alecha Nafshi. A person is not allowed to say, oh, I feel so bad, oh, that's so sad, and then just go on with his life as if it's regular. And go home and eat and drink and go on the phone and talk to his friends and go on as if nothing happened. Ela yitza'er adam im hatzibor. A person is obligated to feel the pain with the tzibor, to feel the pain of our friend, to feel the pain of the community. A person who is Eved Hashem, every person has an obligation to feel the pain of the next person and to try to ease that burden and to try to carry that burden with them. And that is the greatness of Moshe Rabbeinu. We're almost done with the sources. We're going to talk about it. That is the greatness of Moshe Rabbeinu, the source that we're all familiar with. What makes him great? What made him into this incredible leader that he was when he literally grew up in the home of the Egyptian king? He had everything in the palace. He was the rich prince. He had everything coming for him. And everyone knew that there were slaves. It was something and no one was sensitized to. But what happened? The Yigdal Moshe literally means it grew up. But Rashi, with his explanation, you could say the Yigdal Moshe doesn't mean he grew up. He became great. How did he become great? What's the secret to greatness? The Yitzei Alachav, when he went out, even though he had everything, he had the riches, he had the comfort, he had everything he needed. The Yar B'Sivlo Tam. He saw their pain. He had everything. He had the family he needed. I'm not saying him, actually. Even though he did have it. Sometimes we can have everything. But how does one become great when we're Vayar B'Sivlotam, the famous Rashi there, Natan Einav V'Liboli Yod Mitzar Aleyev. It's an active Midah. It means Natan Einav. It's not like I glanced and I saw it. We see so many Tzah suffering. So much throughout the day which we don't see. Says Rashi, Natan Einav. He put his eyes there. You know how many times we're walking by people that are sad and are lonely and who need a good word and who need to be included and we don't see them. We see them, but we don't see them. How do we become a person that's nosi v'olam chaviro? Says Rashi, Natan. Don't be a person that's so distracted with whatever is going on in our lives that we don't put our eyes to where they're glancing. Put your eyes, pay attention to what you're looking at. And when you're notain einayim, then you can get to the next step, realize that something's there, then put it in your heart. And then it will move you to action. How did Moshe became great? He was a person who noticed others suffering and he did something, he felt and he did something about it. Because that is what creates greatness. That is what builds the Beis HaMikdash and that is how we emulate HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Because every moment of the day, the very fact that you're here and you're breathing and you're listening or not listening to what I'm saying is all a gift from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Because he has his ultimate rahmanas on us and he endlessly gives and gives and gives and tries to better our lives and help us. And when he can't, which if we have time, we'll talk about why he can't. We'll get back to a story there. It hurts him. And he's there with us every single step of the way. In fact, I don't know if you even know this is halacha. We've had a lot of experience with bugs, Baruch Hashem, this summer. Big Jukim, I understand from Rishit that it's like an epidemic all over the country, and it's supposed to be gone another week or so, which doesn't really help you guys. Hopefully Mashiach will come, we won't be going home, and it will help us. But they've been very nice and exterminated, so now we're seeing a lot of dead bugs. But in any case, there's been a lot of getting up on chairs because I know they're big. But in any case, or Moshe Feinstein actually has a halacha. He says that if you see, probably wouldn't be one of these, because no one would do that with their hands, but if you see like what Rivka, has near her, right? One of those little bugs where a little bug, he says you're not allowed to, halachically, kill it with your hands. You're not, you know, you ever see someone like that? Or like, bang? So he says, halachically, ideally, you're not supposed to ever kill a bug with your hands. It's always with a shoe, with a tissue, with something else. Why? Because when you do it with your hands, there's a certain amount of, I don't want to say cruelty, but lack of compassion. Sometimes you have to kill a bug. You don't want it to bite you, right? It's bothering the whatever's going around. When you do it with something else. So that lack of feeling for even an insect doesn't penetrate. If we need to be so sensitive to even insects, how sensitive do we have to be to the next person to not become desensitized to feeling for them? And the truth of the matter is there's so much pain out there. There's so much in the news. There's so much in the media and the movies that are watched that it actually makes us become desensitized to people's pain. So many of the things that people watch, in some sick, distorted way, it gives them pleasure to see other people's pain. That's what so many of the movies. When you're sitting there crying, you feel good, which is crazy, because you feel like you're very into whatever it is, which is a crazy concept. And then when it comes to real people's pain, we're so used to seeing pain and hearing pain and even enjoying pain that it's hard to really feel for the next person. My mother, she's just living me well. Something very, very special about her. She works in OHEL for many, many years. She deals with many terrible situations, and it's constantly involved with families and trying to help families and abuse and everything. When my mother reads a newspaper, you literally can see her crying. When she reads the New York Times and a terrible tragedy happens, she cries. Most people don't do that. Most people are so used to hearing and being bombarded with this one's sick and that one's this and that one's this and that one's that, that we become desensitized to feeling other people's pain. Says Rav Moshe Feinstein, we can't even become desensitized to killing a bug. That's how much we have to zone in and work on feeling and seeing the next person's pain. So let's try to bring it home, and then we'll talk about the flip side in a much shorter way. How can we be that person to lighten the burden of that heavy suitcase some people are bearing? So we definitely said taking time out to actually notice, even if it's of a minute a day. 2 minutes a day in the middle of lunch, I'm actually going to look around and see the people around me. It has to be a concentrated effort because we're so not in it. We're so busy recording things that we're never in the moment. To actually be in the moment and look around at the people around you and to see, sometimes it has to be a minute a day, 5 minutes a day, just to notice the people, notain enough, and to try to think about the people around us. That's certainly true. What are practical ways we can ease and carry the next person's burden? So firstly, I guess let's go through a few examples. One of my children, actually, I've said this story a few times, I apologize if you heard it, but I think it's very profound, and it gives the example about, just before I go on to the next idea of just seeing people and zoning into it. When one of my daughters was younger, so when she was in eighth grade, they have in Israel these tests, what are they called? These Israeli, anyone? Mevchan Artzis. Mevchan Artzi. They're sort of like the whole entire country, I guess the religious schools taped them, and it's actually an awesome thing. When 7th and 8th grade, they know more than most girls graduating from high school know. It's literally material and Tanakh all over the place, Bekiyot, it's an amazing thing. I feel bad for people who can't memorize, I don't know what they do, but it's certainly, for those who can do it, it's an amazing thing, the knowledge that they walk out with. So in 7th grade, like every 2 weeks, they had another test, or a week they had another test, and they had the big test at the end. I think it was 7th grade. And every single week, they had study parties, they had their group of friends, and every single week, it would be at someone else's house. I remember them all like being on our trampoline one time, and they were studying, very cute, whatever it was, just sitting on the trampoline, and studying, they had their study parties. And it was very thoughtful of them. Baruch Hashem, they had a beautiful chavra, but they always thought of one or two girls that they included along who didn't necessarily have friends. And one time it was the turn to be in one of the houses of the girl who doesn't have that many friends that they were including. The truth of the matter is, I probably, if I would have known more about it, I usually do. It was a big group of friends. I probably wouldn't have let my daughter go to the house, but okay, for other reasons. But basically, they came to the house to study, and it was literally upside down. It was the messiest thing they'd ever seen. Everything was literally, it smelled terrible. It was upside down, literally. And it was just like this dirty, smelly, messy feel. So they all sit down, and they're studying. And it happens to be whoever's turn it is. They used to bake stuff. Like, you would put out cookies, or you would put out cake, or whatever it was. And that was just the thing that they did. And coffee, or whatever it was, and put in the middle, and they would all study. So this girl's so excited. She has this cute, cool chavra in her house, and they're studying. And she put out the cookies, and they're all sitting there, and it's really gross. And they're sitting there studying. And this particular child of mine happens to be extremely neat and organized. And she's sitting there, and they're studying. And then she said, I happen to be, I'm sorry, and I was like, I'm a little bit of a germy. Not a little bit, I am a germy. I also don't eat things like, let's say, a kiddishes, unless, I know I sound crazy, no one would expect this, unless I know who made it, because I want to make sure that they're clean, okay? So for better or for worse, it passed down to some of my children. Some people think I'm asking who made it because of kosher reasons. Of course, sometimes it's like that, but usually it's not. But no, other people don't know about it now that it's being recorded. Okay, I can't ask that at kiddushes anymore. But so this passed down to some of my children, certainly. And there's this big plate of cookies in the middle. And my daughter said she was sitting there. She came home afterwards, and she's like, I'm sitting there looking at the cookies. Of course, no one's taking it. I'm thinking, like, she's going to feel so bad. She worked so hard. She's so excited to have it in her house. So she took a cookie, and slowly but surely, she started biting into it, and she was very, very nauseous, but she kept eating, and she ate the whole entire cookie. And then she said, because it was a good 15 minutes, and no one had taken anything, and the girl's face lit up. We continued. She came home. She was nauseous. She rinsed her mouth out, and that was the end of the story. But I was so proud of her, because forget about the age of the seventh grade. To be able to zone in, like, it's nice enough that we're including this kid or coming to our house and this is gross and all we could think about is ourselves. But it was zoning into the fact that she made these cookies. She's going to feel so bad if no one eats those cookies. And what's it going to do to me? So I'll eat a cookie and it's not the cleanest thing in the world. I don't know if I would be able to do it, I'll be honest with you. But it's not. It's an amazing thing. Sometimes it just takes a few seconds of thought with a small act that could really, really ease the burden of someone tremendously. I know that I'm going to give a few examples. Again, we said, like, just noticing we spoke about. Another example, I'll give a story with that also, a few stories now. Another example, I don't have tons of time left, so I'm going to talk quickly, try. Another example, also, some of you may have heard this story from me before, is there was once a bunch of girls who were in a school setting, I don't know if it was a Benos or something like that, and a woman comes over and says, did you see my son? Did you see my son? And they're like, no. And she's like, she holds up her two-year-old child, and she says, he looks exactly like this. They're identical twins. I can't find him. I'm looking for him. So everyone stops, and they're looking around, and no one could find him, and the woman's panicking, and everyone's looking, and no one can find him. And finally, literally after a half-hour search, one of the girls comes. She's like, I found him. Thank you. Where did you find him? She said, in the classroom on the fifth floor in the back row in the corner, the second to last seat by the corner, he had crawled underneath, and he had fallen asleep. And the mother was so thankful, and then after she calmed down, she said, can I ask you something? So many people looked in that room. No one saw it. Him. There were 30 seats in that room. This was in the back corner. No one else stood there going through under every single desk, in every single floor the way you did. How did you do that? How did you even think to do that? And this girl turned back to this woman and she said, my brother is Levi Klatsko. I don't know if any of you know who he was. He is. You guys know who he is? Many years ago in Brooklyn, unfortunately, he was a young boy. He was walking. It was a terrible story. Someone kidnapped him, really, unfortunately, killed him in terrible ways. And there was a while that in Brooklyn, everyone was looking for him and he was missing. a little thing, understanding. She said, I know what it's like to look for someone. Sometimes it takes just a few seconds of thought, and it brings us to the next level of greatness, like the Moshe Rabbeinu. There are people who, sometimes you know you're dancing, oh my gosh, I lost my earring. Lahavdil with a child. And some people are like, continue dancing because they're into it. And some people will stop for a second and look around like, oh, I'm so sorry. And some people will stop and actually help the person until they find the earring. That is a person who is a nosi ba'olam chaveru, who said she's so upset about her earring, I would want to find my earring or my phone or whatever it is. And they stop whether or not they're close friends with the person or not. And they help the person carry the other side of the stroller. And all of a sudden, everything becomes lighter. Helping people find things. Zoning into what the person needs. Being a listening ear. Sometimes we don't realize people unburden to us, and we think we have to have all the right answers. Sometimes we avoid being around them because we're like, I don't know what to say. But sometimes someone unloads and we feel like we have to know what to say and what the plan is and what they should be doing. And we're thinking the whole time about what advice we're going to give. And the greatest thing a person can do, and the way to ease their burden the most that they could possibly can, is just by listening. Most of the time, people don't want advice. Most of the time, people just want someone to listen, not while they're looking down on their phones, not while they're distracted looking at other people, but looking at them and actually listening. Becoming Shmiat Ha'ozen is one of the 48 ways the Perkei Avos is quoted, being a person who can listen. I almost did the share on that, being a listener. Is one of the ways to acquire Torah. Rabbi Tzimachas, all the tremendous stories we heard about her was her power of just listening. When someone feels, Ein li makir, no one's with me, it is the loneliest feeling. To have someone just listening, being a listener, is a tremendous way to become a nosei be'olam chaviro. Sometimes just saying, I am so sorry. Not having any answers, but just showing empathy or sympathy goes so far. I saw this Rav Moshe Weinberger thing that he said that Rav Yitzchak Dvorky, someone once came to him, they had tremendous sorrows in their family. And one thing was going wrong after this. They came to Rav Yitzchak Dvorky and they said to him, Rebbe, this is happening and this is happening and this is happening. Could you please help us? And he said back to them, he thought for a few moments, he said, I'm so sorry, but there's nothing I could do in Shemayim that can possibly help. Really? Nothing? There's nothing I could do. So the man left. What could he do? He had traveled all the way there. He had nothing to do. And as his wagon is leaving and going, all of a sudden he looks back and he sees Rav Yitzchak Dvorky running after him. And he says, what? He comes up to the wagon and he says, I told you there's no bracha I could give you. There's nothing I could do. But I didn't cry with you. And he goes and he sits in the wagon with him and he puts his arms on his shoulder, his arms around his shoulders, and he sits there and the two of them just cry together. And it happens to be, Rav Moshe Weinberger said, after that they had tremendous issues. Sometimes there's nothing we can say. There's nothing we could do. We can just listen, and sometimes we can just feel. Making sure that we're not numb to the pain of the next person. We spoke last night about davening. Sometimes the most that we can possibly do is daven. We said this last night. How many of us in Shema Kolenu ask for things for people beyond our immediate family or people that are close to us? To notice that all of our tefillot are belashon rabim. It's all in plural. Help. Don't think about just our parnasa. Everyone's parnasa. Everyone's health. Everyone's tefillos answered. We should never be a person to be very, very machbid. If you get a WhatsApp about davening for someone, if you get an email for davening for someone, sometimes I have the RBS list. Everyone, they have 5-town shuls. You know, everyone know what I'm talking about? They have those, yes, anyone, right? I always try to make sure that even if I'm just like glancing through it, if you pass, please daven for, you stop for a few moments, you look at it, and you say a paragraph to him like you would want if it was someone in your family, God forbid. No se bo'am chavero, sometimes davening is the most powerful tool. We can do nothing other than daven, but that's a person who takes it to the next level. You should know that Erev Shabbos, right before Shabbos, I got a call, and she said, "Hi, it's Racheli," and it took me a few minutes to remember. She says, "I heard you're working on this beautiful chagigi wedding for me. I'm so excited. Thank you so much." I said, "Of course, we're so excited. Thank you so much." And she said back to me, she said, "Can I just ask you a favor?" I said, "Sure." She said, "Can you get a list of names from the girls, of anyone and everyone that I can daven for?" That was what was on her mind as she's entering her wedding. She just wants a list of people to daven for. And I said, "Of course, we'll get it for you. You want it at the wedding, before the wedding." I was thinking, great, another job that we have because we're dividing up the jobs. And but davening for people can be the greatest way. There's so many people who need shidduchim. And sometimes we'll say, "Oh, I feel so bad." But sometimes it's just actually doing something. It's davening, or it's just picking up the phone. "I know this person's involved in shidduchim. Let me just tell her about that person." Just trying to zone into the next person is tremendous. I had so much more to say. We only have 5 minutes left. So I want to just bring it to the second aspect. We spoke about emulating HaKadosh Baruch Hu and really feeling for the next person, noticing, doing something, davening. You should know that Baruch Hashem, Be'ezrat Hashem, this is a chance to tell you, so I'll tell you now, that Baruch Hashem, before Sukkot and Pesach, we have a gemachal. You'll see why I'm telling you in a minute, because we're going to collect at the end of the summer from you, Be'ezrat Hashem, in our house. Before Sukkot and before Pesach, we have a gemach. People literally who can't afford anything, some people who can afford, we try to have everyone come together. It's clothing, it's nicer clothing, weekday, Shabbos. What we have is like a shoebox where people put in whatever they could afford. No one knows how much anyone puts in, so no one feels bad. I'll tell you the story about how that happened another time. And basically, all the money goes towards a family. So it helps people make yentif, but all the money goes towards a family with a very sick father. How did it start? My son was your age. When he was little, he once came in. He was like 7 years old, I think, around something like that. And he came in with tears in his eyes. And he was like, you know, I said, what happened, Alice? And he says to me, you know, he was playing a ball outside. And one of the neighbors said to him that he was so excited because it was his turn to buy shoes in his family now. This year, it was his turn to buy shoes. And he couldn't believe that they had 10 kids in their family, I think. And it was his turn to buy new shoes. Meaning, the rest of the time, they just get new shoes, or they just make do with hand-me-downs or whatever it is. And he couldn't believe that he gets shoes once every 5 to 10 years. So that he's like, we have to do something, we have to help them. So we started the gemach, and that year, we actually got a credit in the shoe store, and they didn't realize where it came from. And then Baruch Hashem, from then on, we do it elsewhere. A rav in the community gives them the money for yontif, etc. But sometimes there's people right in front of our faces that we can do so much to help if we would just open our eyes and notice. And I guess with my last 5 minutes, I want to talk about the flip side also. I have a lot of beautiful sources that I would have shared with you, which I don't have. But we know that Aaron was able to be incredibly happy for Moshe Rabbeinu when Moshe Rabbeinu was picked as the leader. Even though he was always the leader when Moshe Rabbeinu was picked, he was completely happy. And basically, the Gemara tells us that Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai said, "Liv shesamach begdulat achiv yilbash urim betumim." That heart that's able to be so happy for the next person, even though it was his turf really, that person gets to wear the urim betumim. And that's why Aaron had the choshen, a beautiful, gorgeous, gorgeous piece in Sichos Maser Nafrenah. He got the Kohen Gadol gets the choshen. Gets to wear the Urim V'Tumim because he felt so happy for the next person. And that type of person can feel the pain of all of Klal Yisrael, and that person can be a leader. If I were to ask you, what's a true friend? What would you answer? Someone who's able to be really feel your pain, probably, correct? Someone who, when you're going through a hard time, you know you can lean on them, you can know you're there for them. This shows us that there's an even higher level. An even higher level than feeling the pain for the next person is feeling happiness for the next person. Sometimes it's easier to feel bad for someone than it is to feel happy for their successes and the good things that happen to them. And that's why it says that if he was able to be happy, then he certainly can feel sad for the next person. He can become a leader. He can wear the Urim V'Tumim. Emulating HaKadosh Baruch Hu, having true Ahavas Chinam, feeling for the next person means having empathy and helping them with their burden, and also feeling happiness for them when they're happy. When they get into that seminary that I wanted to go to and I don't necessarily, and I'm still able to be happy for them. If they have something, they have an amazing family and I have struggles with my family and I'm able to be happy for them. Or even if we both have something, she got a new pair of whatever it is, I'm able to be happy for her. That level of simcha for the next person, which will feel a little bit better, Zrat Hashem, this Tuesday night for our chasen and kala, we don't only want it for the big, huge, bang things that we do. We want to bring a true ahavat chinam of loving the next person is being able to be happy for the next person, whether that's dancing for them and in a way at their weddings that shows that we're really happy. Another idea of how to do this is to smile at people. So many beautiful sources in it which we don't have time to. Rav Volbi said he once met an old man, and Ali Shore, he says he once met an old man probably in his 90s, and he asked him what his name was. And he said his name, Shlomo Volbi. So he took both of his hands and both of his hands, put it together, and he says, "It's so nice to meet you. I want you to know in the olden days when I was younger, whenever we'd meet a new person, we'd give shevach, praise, and thanks to the Ribbono Shel Olam that now we have another, I met another new person, I have somebody else in this world to love." With such incredible warmth. When someone smiles at a person, the Ramchal says, we act, everything we do is with our bodies, with our guf. But inside, the most important part is our neshama. When someone smiles, that's taking their neshama and bringing it out to their guf. A smile is a reflection of our soul. If we want to be people who are more soul than body, as opposed to body than soul, which so many of us are, the smile brings that soul out into the world. When you smile at a person, you automatically bring warmth and bring light and see them in a positive way. When we start smiling and smiling and smiling, we start paying attention to the next person, says Rav Volbi. We start feeling more warm, and then we actually start feeling happier for the next person. The more you smile, the happier you'll feel for the next person, says Rav Volbi. Compliments. Giving people compliments. She looks so good, and so for some weird reason I'm not happy for her, because even though it doesn't take away from me, say it. Even though it's hard for me, you look so good. Or I love that dress, and I'm like, why didn't I get that? No, say, I love that dress. You look so good in that dress. Or that was such an awesome Dvar Torah. Or that was such a thoughtful thing to do. Or you have so many friends, even though deep down I'm jealous, when we don't look at the next person and feeling happy for them, when you bring it out into a compliment, into a word, you will find yourself actually being happy for the next person. Oh, Baruch Hashem. I have to end. So I'll end with a quick story. We spoke about, I had a few other really great stories for another time. We spoke about zoning in. Simat leiv, notain leiv. Notain einayim. Put your eyes a few minutes a day to recognize and do something. And daven. And be a listening ear. And let's emulate HaKadosh Baruch Hu in that way. And then we spoke about being happy for the next person, acknowledging, giving compliments, smiling, looking at the next Jew as a person that we can help and we can love and we can give to and we can be happy for. And that's really what Ahavas Chinam is about. Pure love that's not based on anything other than you are a Jew and you are a daughter of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There's a story that's a little bit famous. It was going around after the Chabad gathering this year, but I'm going to say it anyway because I think it's such a beautiful story. I'll say it very, very quickly because I literally have 1 minute left and I want to give you 5 minutes to just write. But there was a man, I wrote down the names, by the name of Yossi Sobianski. And for many years, they didn't have any children, him and his wife. And finally, after many years, they went for help and they had a child. And because of that, they said, okay, now we're ready to go do shlichas. And they moved to Denver. And they were doing shlichas in Denver. And they figured in Denver, there are a lot of fertility clinics, one of the best in the country, so we'll be able to get help there to have a second child. They moved there. They were going for years of help, pouring tons and tons of money into it. And finally, at one point, the doctor sat them both down and he said, "You have a beautiful child. I think it's time for you to be happy with him and to move on in life and accept the fact that you're not going to have any more children." And it was very, very hard for them, but they said, okay, Baruch Hashem, Hashem blessed us. He said, especially in our communities where there's so many children around, it was very, very hard for them, but that was it. Then the video flips to someone else, a man by the name of Rabbi Sherman from Philadelphia, and he said after the Mumbai attacks, they decided they had to do something, Le'iloi Nishmat, Gabi and Rifki, who were killed. They had this whole gathering. They invited all Jews, religious, not yet religious, and they had a whole big Askara memorial for them. And there were many, many people there, and included in that audience was Dr. Glasner, who is one of the top fertility experts in the world. And after this beautiful, moving video of, like, we're going to live on, and we're going to change the world, and we're going to do things in their memory, Dr. Glasner comes up to Rabbi Sherman, and he says, they took five, I'm going to give back five. Okay? And that night after, he's like, they're writing other charts, follow-up, who do we reach out to, Kirov, who do we help, blah, blah, blah. And then he remembers what Dr. Glasner said to him. So he goes and he picks up the phone, and he calls Dr. Glasner, and he says, remember that line you told me? And he says, yes. He says, you said they took five, I'm going to give back five. What did you mean by that? So he said, I meant every word I said. They took five Jews, I am going to give back five Jews. Find me five rabbis that don't have children, that are suffering from fertility, and I promise you I'll do everything that I can. It costs millions of dollars for these things. So this Rabbi Sherman's like, oh my goodness. And he's starting to reach out to people, and then he remembers Rabbi Sarabiansky, who he knew from like literally 20 years before they were in yeshiva together, and then he had heard that he was having problems with fertility. He picks up the phone, he says, how are you? And he says, fine. He says, do you remember me? He says, vaguely. And he says, listen, here's the story. This doctor, Dr. Glasner, who's willing to do it, come down. He's like, oh my goodness. They come down, and he says, I just have one request of you, the doctor says. No matter how many times we fail, I don't want you to give up hope. We're going to keep trying until it happens, Be'ezrat Hashem. He's not yet religious, this doctor. And they said, okay, and they had all the treatments planned out. And basically, they're about to have this, the big treatment, and his wife loses her mother. And they have to sit shiva. So they call the doctor, I'm so sorry, we can't come for the weekend. My wife lost her father. So he says, where is she sitting shiva? He says, Boston. He's like, okay, I have friends there. They're going to do the testing. Go there. Just let her leave for a few hours to do the testing. And at the end of the week, I want you to come down to Philadelphia, and we'll finish the treatments here. So the woman asks her father. He says, no problem. They do the testing in Boston. And at the end of the week, Rabbi Sarabiansky and his wife pick up. They go to Philadelphia. And she sits shiva in this Rabbi Sherman and his house. They never met his wife before in their lives. And they're there for Shabbos. Here's this private concept of having fertility issues and sitting shiva in someone else's house. They welcome them warmly. And Baruch Hashem, 9 months later, they had beautiful twin girls. And after those twin girls, the doctor says, okay, we have to talk about, you know, contraception. He's like, what are you talking about? He said, you know, sometimes after you have fertility treatments and you have twins, you can have another baby right away. He said, I spent millions of dollars in 20 years trying to have a child. I'm not taking any kind of, if Hashem wants to give me another one, I'll take another one. And Baruch Hashem, soon after, they had another child. And they have four children. And it's a beautiful, beautiful video. But Rabbi Yossi Sarabiansky says at the end, he says, you know, so many times we have the key in our world and we don't even realize. We see so many people with a need, so many people with a vacuum that we can fill, but we're so busy with our own lives that we don't realize we have the keys in our hand. This Rabbi Sherman stopped and thought and said, I know this guy, and he picked up the phone and look what he did. We have a beautiful family of four children now. He says every single person may know another person who can be a connection for that shidduch. Every person has the keys to be able to connect someone to something else to help them. Even 16, 17-year-old girls can make an impact that cannot be fathomable. But so many times we're so busy with our lives, you don't stop. It takes one call. It takes one text. One, I'm thinking of you, that can make a person feel not ein li makir, but that someone's here with me and can change an entire world. Sometimes it's just a little call, a little text, a little connection that can literally make the suitcase so much lighter to carry. I give us all a bracha, not that I can give brachos, but any person can give brachos, especially as we near the end of Tisha B'Av, for all of us to realize how much Hashem loves us, how much pain He's in when we're in pain, how happy, there's no greater fan. There's no one who loves us as much as HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There's no one who feels simcha, whatever that means, the way that HaKadosh Baruch Hu does for us. And may we take those two words, V'halachta b'drachav, of the Torah, and be a person who really helps ease the next person's burden. Be a person who uplifts the next person. Be a person who feels and does something about the next person's pain. Be a person who feels and does something about the next person's happiness. Let's show HaKadosh Baruch Hu how much we love each other in the realest, purest sense. We're happy for each other's happiness, and we're there for each other when things are bad. And we're not so involved in our own worlds that we don't see it. Let's take out 5 minutes a day, 2 minutes a day, to just look around us and see, what can I do to uplift the next person? And I'm sure that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will look down on us and give us the ultimate smile. Not only the smile that we give to each other, the ultimate smile, and the ultimate nod that allows true brightness and true greatness and true simcha to reign in the world, so we can dance towards the Beis HaMikdash and really serve Him in the ultimate way that we'd like to. Okay, now what I'd like us to do is, we literally have, I know it's running late, we literally have 5 minutes. I mentioned at the beginning that what makes Tisha B'Av so real is that it's not just a beautiful moment, but that it becomes a part of us. So what I'd like you to do is, you have your phones or your paper, and I'd like you just for 2 minutes to take something I said to share, or something someone else said, or some other thought that you had over Tisha B'Av. What I'd like you to do is to take a few moments, literally 3 minutes now, to write some thoughts on how you can take this Tisha B'Av with you.